God, I'm hungry now.
We
could eat cat.
We have two, one for you, one for me. You know what they say about mammals?
That they do like they do on the Discovery Channel?
Sure.
And welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And have you ever had a drink that you want? It's complicated. Me right now with the doctor, it's complicated.
Well, we are going to get a sample of one of your favorite doctors today. If you're looking here on the Blu-ray, we're going to watch not an anniversary special. In fact, to my knowledge, the only non-anniversary multi-doctor story, season 22, serial 4, The Two Doctors.
Wow. Dos Doctores.
Dos Doctores. this is, like I said, the only non-anniversary multi-doctor story. Because of that, I still wanted us to watch it with the other ones while it isn't.
So what was there any occasion or did, was it just for whimsy?
That leads into the Cassie Professor a little bit here.
Yeah, I'm very good at that.
So my understanding is there were two reasons why they wanted to do The Two Doctors. They did it partly because The Five Doctors was a big success.
Yes.
That was why the production team behind it wanted
to. The Five Doctors, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We only had four.
Yeah, the Five Doctors was such a success that they had wanted to do another one. They wanted to do another multi-doctor story. Mm-hmm. And there was also one of the doctors from that first story had so much fun on the production, they had offered to do it again. So, Cassie, your first question to the professor today is, which doctor do you think is partnered up with Tom Baker today?
Colin Baker.
Which doctor do you think is partnered up with Colin Baker today?
Certainly not Tom,
because Tom didn't have a fun time on The Five Doctors at all. He didn't even show up.
His wax statue had a blast, though. Okay. May I ask who is still living?
Okay, so there would be three doctors from that serial that would be alive then.
Okay.
If we're excluding Tom Baker.
Yes.
Excluding Tom, Patrick Troughton would be alive, John Pertwee would be alive, and Peter Davison would be alive.
Okay.
Richard Herndl had died about a year after The Five Doctors, and as you know, William Hartnell had already died.
Yes.
You got three choices here. Two, three, or five.
Two, three, or five. Okay, because that does help me. That does give me a 1 in 3 chance. Mm-hmm. Unless you're gonna do a stink and say, "LOL, they're all in it."
Just kidding. David Tennant as a child is in this one.
Here's the thing: is I could definitely see Troughton just being like, "I had just a wonderful time bringing it back. I love this role. I could absolutely see." Him
mm-hmm.
really enjoying that, even though he is getting older, he still has this ability to play this particular character.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I would love to see. Okay, we're gonna step out of the little, like, we're gonna step out of the box for a second. Frankly, I could see any one of them having a wonderful time playing the Doctor with Colin Baker. Just because I do feel like his doctor is kind of the amalgamation of all of them. Like,
I can understand that.
Six to me feels very much like the.
He feels like he took a little bit from everything and then made it.
Yes,
his own.
Thank you. Because he is still a bit of a dandy. You know?
Yeah, there's definitely like a Ponce, like, I'm better than you attitude.
There's a Ponce, poshness, but there is also a very silly quality, but then a very earnest.
Personal dramatic quality to mm-hmm. him.
So frankly, I could see two, three, or five matching really well with six.
Mm-hmm.
That does not make this any easier for me to decide who it actually is.
The real question is, who do you think had such a good time on the five doctors that they wanted to do it again?
It boils down to, like, genuinely two or five.
Okay. Because three spent a lot of time in his car, so I could see that being
Three, I also feel like, enjoys...
Three was spending too much time with a teleporting robot.
Like, three, I do feel like, enjoys it, but especially as the show progresses, mm-hmm. and especially as, like, filming progresses and, like, vibes change, mm-hmm. three feels like a classically trained actor. Or, like, as a classically trained actor, I don't think would be super into,
like, coming back for the show. You think?
Yeah.
There are some actors like that, like Eccleston. So I'll get into this when we do when we talk about the anniversary. But Stephen Moffat has gone on record as saying that he thinks Eccleston is just not the kind of actor to come back to a role.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doctor Who has some actors like that. Tom Baker wasn't really like that either. He didn't really want to come back after he had done mm-hmm. so much of the show. Part of that may have been more burnout than, like, he's not that kind of actor. But yeah, there's definitely been actors that just don't seem interested in recurring the role. So if you feel that way about Pertwee, that's totally valid.
This is the part of the show where I try to read Zach's mind.
Maybe it might be more interesting to ask, who do you want to see with Colin Baker?
That's what I'm saying, is, like, if I'm stepping out of my little, like, posh box of, like, I don't know a bit about Doctor Who. I put a lot of fucking thought into this show when we're not recording. Mm-hmm. I would like the record to show.
You think of so many ways to get angry and yell at me.
Yes, I do. On and off the pod, yes. That is very true and accurate statement.
Usually deserved. Almost always deserved.
Hey. We have that on recording now.
Your Honor.
Uriner. So if I'm definitively ruling out Pertwee.
Okay. That leaves you with Troughton or Davison.
I know. Dave Fiveson.
Patrick or Peter.
Can I ask, do I have a 50-50 shot?
I mean, between those two, you have a 50-50 shot.
Why did you say no, though?
Because I'm not going to tell you, because I already narrowed it down to three for you. I'm not going to narrow it down even further.
Please.
No.
Please.
You get to pick.
Hi. Yeah, I just got a phone call from all of our, like, four listeners.
They're all mad at you and they want you to tell me the answer.
Uh-huh.
You got three already. You got Patrick, you got Pertwee, you got Peter.
Yeah, but I ruled one out. Can I ask you if it's a 50-50 shot?
If you've got two options, then yes, it's a 50-50 shot.
Of those two, though, that I picked.
Yes, it's a 50-50 shot of those
Whoa!
Two.
Whoa! Manipulation worked. Okay, fuck. All right. So, I want it to be Troughton because I like him way better than Davison, but I get the feeling that I get the feeling that it's probably Davison,
mm-hmm.
but also.
Also, just say it's Davison. There's no second D.
Davison.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that... Here's the
question, Cassie. Do you think that if you say Troughton, can you will it into existence?
Yes. That's the thing, is I'm going to be really upset if I try to go with the answer that I think is right. And then if I'm wrong, I'm double wrong. It hurts me more than it hurts you. So I'm going to go with Patrick Troughton because I love him.
All right. So the Cassie Professor today,
because I already know it's not my actual homeboy, because you know I would freak out if it was.
They hadn't even cast him in this yet.
I know. Well, no, I'm saying if it was both Bakers.
Oh yeah, that'd be fun.
I would love that.
If it was called the two Bakers instead of the two doctors.
Absolutely love that. What a good, great idea.
Yeah, it can't be your homeboy. They hadn't even cast Paul McGann in this yet.
Oh my god. Don't even get me started. Don't even get me started about Mr. McGann. Yeah, it's got to. If it is Troughton and I don't guess Troughton, I will be way more upset than if it isn't and it turns out that it's Davison. So I'm saying Patrick Troughton.
All right. So the first part of the profassi is that Colin Baker teams up with Patrick Troughton in The Two Doctors. And the second part of the Cassie Profassi today... Mm-hmm. I feel like you're really going to like this other question because
I never like the questions you write, but go on.
This story has an alien species in it known as the Andragum. And they are sort of a hedonistic race.
Oh, no.
Meaning that they are obsessed with one of the things a hedonist would be obsessed with.
I apologize for nothing.
Yes. Do you think they are obsessed with A, food, B, money, or C, physical pleasure?
Oh my God. I got to put down the mic for this one. I want it to be option C so bad. I don't think the BBC would do that.
Now, I didn't say sexual pleasure. I said physical pleasure.
We just like touching each other's bodies in a non-sexual, consensual way.
We like to wear lots of oils.
I like to be slippery, slimy, like a newborn baby otter.
Never know when you need to be prepared for a massage.
What was the name of them?
The Andragum.
Andragum, okay. So it was food, money, or...
Physical pleasure.
Physical pleasure.
I think those are the three things a hedonist would be most into.
We can call one up and ask.
You rang? Oh, I do enjoy all three of those things very much. Thank you.
Food, money, physical pleasure. Well, I think it might be the same thing of I will be so angry if I say money and then it is physical pleasure because that's the answer I want it to be. Because I've deviated from playing this game as accurate as I can and more or less picking the answers I like the most if I don't know. So I'll say C for Cassie.
All right. So Cassie's prophecies for this episode are that it features Patrick Troughton and the Andragum are really into physical pleasure. With those things in mind, Cassie, do you have any expectations for the two doctors?
Oh, right now? Absolutely. All expectations went flying out the window when you threw physical pleasure at me. Let's fucking go already!
All right. Well, we will see what Cassie thinks after we watch the non-anniversary multi-doctor story, The Two Doctors.
I bet you they give each other back massages.
The Outback, a wild land of rugged beauty, untamed wilderness, and unrivaled adventure. But you can't afford the 14-hour flight to the land down under, now can you? So come on down to Kangaroo Kyle's Suburban Walkabout. That's right, I'm Kyle, and I'm ready to guide you on an unforgettable journey through the wild frontier of the suburbs. Forget the dusty plains, we traverse the magnificent, freshly paved cul-de-sacs. Observe the indigenous flora, the mighty ornamental pear tree, or the natural beauty of the Celtarius Araucaceae. Watch the majestic 2004 Honda Odyssey migrate from the driveway to the soccer field. Our 5-hour all-inclusive tour provides authentic, up-close encounters with the local wildlife. We'll stalk the elusive Amazon delivery driver, learn to spot the exotic plastic flamingo, and track the footprints of the legendary Territorial Homeowners Association. Now those are some dangerous beast mates. So, whether you're a seasoned explorer or an ordinary couch potato, join Kangaroo Kyle for the adventure of a lifetime movie. Tours depart every Saturday morning from outside the no trespassing sign.
Man, them dogs outside barking up a storm.
Okay.
All right. Cassie can't even do bits right now. She's so upset.
Okay.
And we are back from the two doctors.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's...
That's the longest 2 hours of my whole life.
Can I tell you the part that's really
good? God, man.
Can I tell you the part?
What do you need to say? Just start defending yourself.
Oh,
now,
I'm not
please.
Defending anything. The part that's really frustrating is on paper, this should have been fantastic. It's two of the best actors to ever play the Doctor. Two incarnations that are like so distinctly different that they should have a fun dynamic together. It's written by one of the best writers the show ever had. And it just isn't good. Like it's so ill thought out and ill executed.
It feels like, you know how in every ABC family special, at one point, they go to Disney World. It's almost an obligation of any, like, ABC channel, Disney Channel, anything, that at some point they go to one of the parks.
Yeah.
That's what this felt like, but they went, what if we went to Spain?
What if we went to a random house in the backwoods of Spain? Tell you why you might be right? This wasn't supposed to take place in Spain. This was supposed to take place in New Orleans. They could not get New Orleans.
That makes too much sense, Zach!
That's also why the episode is themed around food, because it was supposed to be set in New Orleans with a food scene.
Why wouldn't it be?
That was why it was set in New Orleans. That's why it was about food. It was also about food because Robert Holmes was in the middle of being a very angry vegetarian.
Oh my God!
So
you like this episode idea? Oh, you want us to go to New Orleans? Wow. No! Let's not go there!
Yeah, the show had a really difficult time. They couldn't make New Orleans work.
That is so unbelievably upsetting.
Yeah.
No shade.
Yeah. Like, Spain's a lovely place.
Well, yes, but when you consider, what if we pick up the Doctor and put him in a place that he is woefully underprepared for?
Yeah.
A place like New Orleans, blessed idea.
Yeah.
Dare I say, one of the best things I have ever heard and thought of and have humored in my brain. I did not like this. I don't know if that's clear, and I'm not.
I'm not going to dance around it.
I don't like this episode either.
It doesn't work. Like, some of the last episode works, but for the most part, the first two episodes are them sort of running around in circles, and it's really boring.
See, Zach, that's not how this dynamic works. I vehemently don't like things. That's your job to defend things. You can't agree with me.
No, I could. I absolutely am. The thing is, this episode is really frustrating me because there's a part of me that's like, I feel like I should like this, and I don't, because it's executed so badly. And I have to assume that it was just like so many hurdles of production weighed down, because Robert Holmes is a good writer. He's written a lot of good episodes for the show, but this one just sucks. Like, it's not good, and it's really frustrating. It's also a really bad multi-doctor story idea.
If we're going to go through and pick apart the episode, which I imagine we will do in a minute or two, the thing that is so grossly disappointing to me is how this is not needed to be a multi-doctor special.
It doesn't. Patrick Troughton the entire time feels relegated to the role of a companion.
Yeah.
Specifically, he feels like a companion that got kidnapped.
Yeah.
And he's going through, because...
Because here's the thing, with any other multi-doctor special that we've seen, I have said at some point, it makes a little bit too much sense for the Doctor, for one earlier incarnation, to be captured in some capacity.
Yeah.
Where the stakes of his existence are so high, because every regeneration after that has a responsibility to save
an earlier one. Yeah.
Doesn't matter which one. You know, but in this particular context, it does follow that example. It is an earlier incarnation. Monty heard me screaming and went, "Are you okay? Please don't yell. I'm here now. Your nurse to make things better." It makes a little bit too much sense then in this particular case where that where you do have an earlier iteration that is being captured, that is in need of the current iteration to save him.
Mm-hmm.
What doesn't make sense in this particular context or in this particular story, and the hangup that I had with it nearly the entire time, is I have no fucking clue what is happening. Who are these people? Now that might be not a failing on my part, but just the very nature of how we do this show. I don't go out on my own and watch specials on my own. I don't watch this unless we're recording it, because why would I? I have King of the Hill for that. So that could very well be I simply don't know things and lore that has been established earlier on. I will give the floor back to you and say, is there a chance that there was just stuff that I missed because I am in the dark for this particular doctor and his stories? Or is this just a very poorly executed?
Our power just fluxed.
Fun. I mean, we're still recording
because we're on a laptop, but...
Do we want to pause and make sure that it's okay?
I mean, everything should be fine, because it would have just been the laptop would have just gone to battery mode for that moment.
True.
And yeah, nothing would have stopped. But it felt like you were so upset that you had turned the power off.
I Matilda'd the power off, yeah.
So here's the thing. There's not really any anything pre-established in this Doctor's era that you missed that you would have gotten from earlier episodes. They do explain what the issues are. The problem is they're just explained. They're very seldom really shown, and they're never felt.
I'm going to put a pin in the phrase that you just said of seldom felt.
Yeah.
We'll circle back to that.
The so just to give it a very basic rundown, especially for people who haven't heard it.
Okay.
Stanley Tucci in The Hunger Games.
Dasani.
He's a genetic engineer that took a primitive species that really likes to eat a lot and tried to turn it into a higher functioning being akin to the Time Lords. And he's basically on the cusp of doing that. He just needs to imprint a bit of Time Lord DNA into it so she can start time traveling. They've sided with these two scientists who have built her that tiny little TARDIS, the little TARDIS tricycle.
Which also, it might have been a nod. It might have not been a nod. At one point, there is an episode of HR Puff and stuff where they find a time machine built by grandfather and grandmother clock and it looks almost identical to that.
Wow, that's really funny.
Just in the general shape. I mean, this one isn't black. This one is brightly colored because it's
HR Puff and stuff.
Yeah, of course. But watching it, I was like, I'm sure that it was just a coincidence, but
yeah,
I can at least sit here and give a chuckle.
Yeah. And so the premise is basically this creature that this being that has been genetically augmented is going to go out through time and space and become a conqueror in the same way that the Daleks of the Cybermen are. That's the threat.
Because they are hungry.
That's the issue, is the idea of them being hungry doesn't really. I mean, yes, there is this part of they want the taste of human flesh. And presumably they would want to do that everywhere. But also they're the Shock Eye is so foppish and goofy that you don't really get any sense of threat of their people.
Shock Eye to me felt like a desperate attempt at a comedic relief character.
Yeah. Chassini is supposed to be this higher elevated being, but she doesn't really feel all that smart. She's a little prepared to deal with the Sontarans. She's got this acid thing, but there's not really much that makes her seem more than just a mob boss.
The only thing that she has over everybody else is that she can read. She can basically cast speak with dead. That's about it.
Yeah, and she can also, she knows ahead of time that the Santarans are going to betray her, which doesn't require a whole lot of intelligence like the Santarans.
I was going to say, when you're I know that about the Santarans. That's saying something.
So that's the basic thing, is this, that we have to make sure that they don't get a hold of Time Lord DNA because blah, blah, blah.
Like, stopping that right there in its tracks, just have this extremely smart, like, Da Vinci-coded man instill Santarans with a sense of, like, intelligence and pride. If you're making a conqueror, why not start there?
Yeah.
You don't need... There was... No need for the hungry people.
Yeah, when people talk
whatsoever.
About... When people talk about... What's the term for it? When people talk about wokeism hurting media, I feel like this is more what they should be thinking about, because the Androgums were just written as a criticism of people that eat meat.
Okay.
Because that's their whole thing, is that they're really hungry and they want to eat humans. And then there's this whole scene where he's torturing Jamie and he's like, oh, no, lesser species don't feel anything. It's like, people who eat meat know that animals suffer when they die. That's not.
And there's also something to be said of sometimes it's literally not a choice. I know. And this is completely not at all.
Mm hmm.
But there are those who are very gung-ho for eating meat and shit, leafy greens. But there are also several people who have several different allergens where it's like meat might be the only way that they can actually get some of their vital amino acids and proteins.
Yeah.
Now, again, that's a very now 2025 heads or like mindset to have. But in this particular context... There is no need to, yes, you can have that as a criticism that is not needed.
Yeah. And it's very flimsy too. Like it feels, it's really difficult to compare a human to a cow. Like the same reason, like even in the context of the story, they acknowledge that they don't eat humans.
Well, particularly okay, if this is going to be an examination on, you know, eating meat is beast-like and it's animalistic, make them animals then.
Yeah.
Don't have them be people, humanoid figures with silly eyebrows and like pimples.
Yeah.
Like there was nothing about them where it's like, oh, I can absolutely understand. Like you are having this alien species be the stand-in for a critique that you are trying to make. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Don't make them people then. Make them so outside of people, but then giving them that familiarity of like that,
or if you're
that need for food and indulgence, and have them, you know, have that be the thing, the common tie between like humanoids and humans, mm-hmm. and then whatever sort of like alien animalistic race that you've created for the sake of telling this like parable.
Yeah. And then
don't make it a doctor story then.
Yeah, it also is just and even if you're gonna make them humanoid, you need to give them like a sense of smug superiority in the way that you want it to be portrayed.
Like
instead you have made him like a pirate. He's supposed to be a Scottish pirate. He's like a Scottish pirate with crazy red eyebrows, and he acts like a big idiot the entire. He's like, oh, but can I please? I want to just carve up the beast real quick. I'm so close to eating the meat all the time, but then somebody pulls me away like five times. Oh,
yeah.
Like, it's so lame.
It's flimsy at best, and it's not entertaining.
Yeah, and then. It's a multi-doctor story where the two doctors barely interact. Like they don't even really seem to meet up until the very they have like one meeting where they're like, oh, I've saved you from your wheelchair. Let's get you out of here. Oh, no, I got to leave you here in the living room because I got to
run out of the house.
Yeah. And then they don't
meet. Absolutely fuck right off. This wasn't a multi-doctor story. This was
two one-doctor stories that dovetail at the very end.
I was going to say, this is yet another example of, let's see how this doctor interacts with this other doctor's companion.
Yeah.
And it's Love seeing a Jamie McCrimmon.
Yeah, it's also love really that. Funny watching Jamie laugh. Like clearly try to hit on Perry a little bit, like not in a way that's like this is inappropriate, but also it's just the thing. It's like I do kind of want to hit that.
I had a whole other bag of worms about Perry. We can get into that whenever you like.
Jamie is a Scottish Highlander, so he's from like the 1500s, I think.
Yeah.
So a girl walking around in little short shorts, he's like, ha.
Yeah, little short shorts and a tied up, a little like crappy top tie top.
Yeah. You can imagine it to a Scottish Highlander that's like, my She's mind. Naked. I can see her ankles.
Yeah, I have a whole host of issues about Perry. If we
that's the other thing is these are two of the best companions in the show.
Oh, and I did not like her in this whatsoever.
Perry is like just does nothing but like scream for the doctor the entire time, and Jamie does nothing.
Perry's boring. I forgot all about any of the positive thoughts that I'd had about Perry at any other point in time because this entire time I went, I hate her. She is,
yeah, it's
like, and you know, we discussed a little bit about it while we were watching it, just some of my thoughts on like what she is wearing since, you know, hello, job, costume. That's my whole deal. But it's the thing that I didn't like about it the most is that I feel like at some point every companion finds some sort of uniform, something that they can wear where it feels very much like when you reach a certain age and you have your very specific like a Disneyland outfit or like theme park outfit where you know it's still cute, like you're still looking good, but it is designed for you for comfort.
Yeah.
This was not that by any means. I don't know where Perry thought she was going at any point. Because there's a part that's like, it kind of makes sense. Like, if they were out on the lake fishing, there'd be no need for a metallic plaid shirt in any stretch of the imagination. Never once have I thought, I'm going out in nature today. Better make sure that they can see me real good. So I'm going to wear my highlighter shirt, my high vis button up vest, my
super
shirt.
Reflective, multicolored.
Again, that's a criticism on me just saying I don't like that outfit. Yeah. But it's also boiling down to,
I mean, it's the 80s. A lot of those outfits have not aged well, especially I feel like 80s UK fashion was probably not even as good as 80s US fashion, for us.
And it was also just the fact of like, if she had been wearing that outfit with tennis shoes, I would have said, okay, like that's whatever. I've worn worse, but it's the fact that she's wearing that with kitten heels that I'm like, what are you, girl?
Get your shit together.
Or pulling your hair back into like a little fashionable like bandana or using it as like a little headband. It reminded me of like the 2010s fashion where it was like those headbands, but then they were covered in like feathers and chains and stuff. And it's simply decorative, but it's also stupid because it's serving no purpose. Mm-hmm. And also there seemed to be a lack of emotional stakes.
Yeah, it felt
everything. Everybody was flat.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like they wanted to make this woman feel like she's really going to be a presence that will be a threat to the universe if she gets the ability to time travel. But the only real friends that she has are a scientist,
Jacini, not Perry.
Yeah. Is Jacini, who looks like, as we said, Stanley Tucci in The Hunger Games.
No, you're thinking Dasani. Okay. For those, because I was just talking about Perry and then you changed the subject like a man. So
I'm sorry. Maybe I thought
we are now discussing.
Well, you were talking about the emotional stakes. That's what
Well, because the entire time I'm still like annoyed with Perry entire time, just being like, what's going on? What is happening?
Help me, doctor.
Is just like.
Like, I understand that to a certain point, that's the function of a companion.
I understand, but also at this point in time, I expect my companions to have some semblance of what the fuck they are dealing with.
And there's plenty of episodes where Perry isn't like that. This is just really not. So this is horribly written for both, for basically everyone involved, which is really like the only time that's really fun is when the second Doctor gets turned into half Andragum, because he's immediately like goofy and weird.
He can be a goof. Yeah. He can be a clown.
Yeah, because they took Patrick Troughton and spent most of the time with him tied down to gurneys and a wheelchair. And that's not a good use of Patrick Troughton.
No, particularly since I had made an observation very early on in my notes that Patrick Troughton is like a reverse Peter Pan. He's an old man who is never young.
he's a portrait of Dorian Gray, but it's he gets to keep staying young on the inside while his outside gets much older.
That's the thing, though, is I was like, if you had put this side by side with like the first time you see him, literally couldn't tell the difference other than how his hair is now streaked with silver. But beyond that, like, physically speaking, this man has not aged a day between his season and now.
Yeah, it is.
So there is something to be said of when you like perfect casting. You found a man who literally was born old. Congratulations.
It's like him and Peter Capaldi are the two doctors that were just born old.
Yeah.
Probably Bill Hartnell, too. I haven't seen much of Bill Hartnell's earlier work. My understanding is he's just kind of always looked like that.
So there's something to be said of like, it's really kind of wonderful to what year did this come out? 82 is my guess, or 85.
Yes, 85.
Yeah, I'm so good at this. The year is 1985. You have this actor that has been the doctor now for quite some time. This is, you know, nothing is new. Mm-hmm. And at this point, your audience is nothing is new. Nothing is surprising.
Yeah.
To see you or to have this doctor, this man that is just being treated like an old man the entire time.
Yeah.
It's disappointing.
Yeah. It's like I said, the thing that made Patrick Troughton fun to watch is he was very physical. Like some of my favorite moments in this story are when he gets Chassini comes over and like has a gun to them. They makes them put their hands up and everyone else puts their hands at like a pretty normal level, except for Jamie and Troughton, who both raise their hands as high as physically possible because Patrick Troughton loves to look like a little goof. And that's the thing. He's a very physical actor. So to strap him down to a gurney and a wheelchair is not a good use of him. It's almost like I kind of wish you'd done the opposite, because Colin Baker is a very like vocal performer. Like the thing that makes him entertaining to watch as the doctor is the way that he speaks all the time. Like he's always having a wonderful idea at any given moment. Like there's a magical way that Colin Baker talks, but he's very stiff, which is not a bad thing. It's just the way he chooses to play the part.
Yes.
So it would have been better if you had those reversed. If Colin Baker had been the one strapped down and just let him be all like eloquent and speaking the way he wants to.
How dare unhand me?
Yes, he refers to himself as sartorial at points, which is just means that he has better fashion sense than Troughton's doctor, which is very funny knowing his coat.
Yeah,
his
coat and his Hawaiian shirt vest.
At one point, he referred to the second doctor as an antediluvian fogey, which is just an old he's just an old conservative is what he means.
Yeah. Strap Baker down.
Yeah. Like let him talk. Like, he's so good at talking. Let strap him down and have Troughton be the one like running around. Because if you're watching him run around, you're going to watch Patrick Troughton run around with his big, like wide bull legged stance. And it will be entertaining to watch.
Because even at that point, it's a literal means of, well, Troughton is an old man.
Yeah, maybe
so we are
going to
keep him strapped down. Have them strapped down together. Make this a two different companions from two worlds work together to save their doctors.
Yeah.
Let them interact with each other, because I am fucking tired of a multi-doctor story where they are on their own individual paths until the final third.
And on that same note, this is such a lame story to be multi-doctor stories.
Oh my God. Okay.
Like going back to the three doctors for a second, there is a black hole that is taking all the power out of Gallifrey. And inside that black hole is secretly one of the gods of the Time Lords. One of the like origin myths of the Time Lords is inside the black hole. Mm-hmm. That's what they have to stop. The Five Doctors, another origin myth, the being that brings about Time Lord culture, that all five of these doctors have to converge in a great pillar in his honor that might be his tomb or might just be where he stays because that's where he's sleepy. Like it's either his bedroom or his tomb and nobody knows it. It's this great obelisk in the center of a dead zone. This one, they're at a house in Spain and one guy really wants to eat the companion and the other girl wants to take
it
some.
It doesn't make sense.
It just even, sucks. Like
even after you explaining to me or explaining this episode, I still am sitting here going, I truly could not tell you what has transpired in the past 2 hours.
Yeah, there's only one good thing that came from this story, in my opinion, and that's something called Season 6B. So I'm about to get a little nerdy with you here, but you might actually find this interesting, at least as like a thought experiment.
All right, kids, buckle up. Zach's going to yam for a couple minutes.
So at the end of Patrick Troughton's run, his last story was a series called The War Games that we will never watch because it's 10 episodes long. It's a great story, and it features some of my favorite things for Patrick Troughton, but it's too fucking long for this podcast. We will never watch it. But at the end of it, the Time Lords arrest Patrick Troughton and say that they are going to force him to regenerate. We don't ever actually see that regeneration on screen. He just kind of makes some faces over a black mat, and then there's some like rotating, hovering faces. The first time we see John Pertwee is not at the end of a regeneration sequence. The TARDIS is on Earth. The door to the TARDIS opens and John Pertwee falls out face flat. So we never see Patrick Troughton become John Pertwee.
Mm-hmm.
And so partly because for whatever reason, Robert Holmes was just not on his game for this episode. There's a lot of stuff in it that doesn't add up with like the series as a whole. And also because Patrick Troughton is visibly older, Jamie McCrimmon is visibly older. The theory is that there's basically a missing season between 6 and 7 that people call Season 6B, where Patrick Troughton's doctor, before being forced into regeneration, was basically told to do some secret spy shit for this Time Lord Secret Service. Which is an interesting idea, because it means there's mysteries that we don't know in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the main things is like he has that little thing that calls his TARDIS for him.
Yeah.
That's a gift from the Time Lords because he's doing an errand for the Time Lords. Patrick Troughton's doctor never did errands for the Time Lords. That's John Pertwee who did that because he was trying to get his TARDIS to fly again.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Holmes forgot that and just thought that was the thing the doctor always did and wrote that into the story. So it's just a thing he forgot, but it does sort of, but in a weird way, it does sort of make sense that if the Doctor is doing errands for the Time Lords in this period after Series 6 or after Season 6,
mm-hmm.
that's why he's been given special presents. Because another thing is Jamie McCrimmon at the end of that story was sent back in time, back to his time with his memory wiped with the Doctor. But for some reason, he is visibly older here and still recognizes the Doctor.
Yes. Recognizes his Doctor.
Recognizes his Doctor, is still doing adventures with him. And so the theory is at some point, Troughton also asked to get Jamie back, which again, it's at least an interesting thing to think about. It's this thing that only exists because of some weird quirks of the show's production. What's really interesting is that it's as close to canon as something can be without being on television.
Without getting actual confirmation, but there is enough evidence here to prove.
Yeah, the BBC's website for Doctor Who, at least at one point, even listed Series 6B as a part of the show.
Hmm.
So whether or not it is true, it's as close to canon as something on Doctor Who gets without actually being on television.
Mm-hmm.
I at least think it's an interesting idea. If they play with that in the future, it sure would be nice. Although I don't know how much you could do with Troughton being dead. That's the one good thing to come out of the story, where something entirely fan created as a theory to explain a lot of this other stuff that just happens to create the concept of really interesting stories. The story itself sucks.
It's a fun thing. Or it's a fun, like, meanwhile.
Yeah.
And especially if you have a story that supports and has evidence supporting it.
Mm-hmm.
However, I cannot imagine having to have waited 3 weeks for this story to air and having that be what you hear news and you hear talk of, oh, there's going to be another multi-doctor story. Oh, they're bringing two back. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. Me, a couple hours ago.
Yeah, the second you saw Patrick Troughton, you were so pumped. You were so jazzed.
Yes. And then somewhere the light leapt from my eyes.
Yeah, the first 20 minutes are pretty okay.
The first 20 minutes is a lot of explaining the world and explaining who we are, what we do, why we're doing it.
Yeah, when they're on the space station, when they first like bump into the chef and the chef's like, "Can I buy Jamie from you? He looks really tasty." And he's like, "No." And then they go meet Dasani, and it's a fun setting. It's interesting character dynamics, especially because the doctor keeps coming up with new ways to call him an idiot.
Yeah.
In a very like verbose way. Then when the sixth doctor shows up, and oh, it's the same space station, but everyone's gone and dead. And like the ship is coming out. Like, those are interesting times. And then at the end, basically from when the doctor becomes half Andragom and they're having to like chase him down to a restaurant.
Chase him into a restaurant that just so happens to be managed by the British entomologist that we saw but moments ago, who also had dreams of being an actor.
Yeah, the British guy in Spain who is an actor and also a guy that likes to collect moths and also runs a restaurant for his friend because he's between acting roles right now. And then that guy gets stabbed. And so he gets to do a little Hamlet monologue.
They have Anita, who I believe is like genuinely Spanish, mm-hmm. or at least speaks the language well enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. She's there to give us context for.
She's there to make it feel like you're actually in Spain.
Oh, yeah, that's
because when they are walking through Seville, it is a mysteriously empty city.
Now, here's my justification for that is Spain has Spain's workday is way different than mm-hmm. the typical American workday. Mm-hmm. So my justification is everybody was having that was their like. Cafecito time. That was like the Spanish nap time. That's what was going on, because there was one cafe that had people in it.
Yeah.
Everybody else was at home taking a nap.
It is kind of funny to picture that moment happening if they had managed to get to New Orleans filming it there, but it's still just as empty. And there's just like a Mardi Gras parade that's just been like abandoned in the middle of the street.
Yeah, we do get to play the game of what would have happened if this was in New Orleans.
Anita would have had a Cajun accent.
That would have been so fun. Could you imagine the doctor trying to talk to somebody who is like fully Creole?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
It reminds me. It would be like the bit that we did in one of our D&D campaigns where you gave an NPC Boomhauer's like speaking rhythm and accent, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor trying to talk to Boomhauer. Oh my God.
Which doctor would be the funniest to try and talk to Boomhauer?
Fucking all of them.
Because six is certainly up there.
Six is very much up there. Nine, I feel like, would just kind of smile and nod and then walk away.
Yeah. Pertwee might also be really funny to watch. Just the stuffier doctors are really going to be the ones that are way funnier to have interact with Boomhauer.
Because I think McGann would just say, "We'll talk later."
I feel like Tom Baker would understand every word.
Yep.
Yes, exactly. That is exactly where we're going right now.
Tom Baker would. I feel like 10 would only in the interest of somewhere deep in 10's lineage. He is a Scotsman. And don't ask me why, but I think Scotsman and Boomhauer would be able to understand each other. I'm sorry, I'm busy now thinking about
David Tennant and Boomhauer talking.
How much more fun this episode would have been if it... Because that's another thing, and it's just... call me a nationalist. They don't come to the U.S. far enough...
In fact, can I tell you something kind of interesting?
Huh?
This is the last foreign shooting they do.
Ever.
Not ever, because the show comes back. This is the last foreign shooting they do until the Eighth Doctor movie. And if you don't include the Eighth Doctor movie, this is the last time the show does foreign filming until the fires of Pompeii.
Jesus Christ.
Every episode between then, with the exception of the TV movie, was filmed in the UK.
Like, when you have the ability to travel through space and time, yet you keep yourself to the confines of your own, like,
country,
your own country, fucking sucks.
I think that's why they do a lot of
space.
They do a lot of bases under siege. A lot of, yeah, we're going to space. We're on an underwater base. We're in a space satellite. We're on a colony somewhere. Things
we're on
like
a
that.
Ship.
Yeah, we're on a ship. I think the modern series definitely gets to play in the space more of
even time still. And space. Could you imagine the Doctor going to Japan?
I mean, there is an episode where the Doctor goes to China. The sad thing is it's a really good episode. The bad thing is it's got Yellowface in it. It's called The Talons of Wang Chiang. It's a Fourth Doctor story where he dresses up like Sherlock Holmes.
Amazing.
There are also episodes where the First Doctor goes to China, I believe, and I think he meets Kublai Khan. But those episodes are, one, lost, and two, also have Yellowface in them.
I mean, if it was a modern episode that was engaging in Yellowface, it'd be,
yeah, it's a lot. It's worse. It's worse the more time goes on. It was always bad, but it's certainly worse the deeper in time you go.
Yeah, yeah.
The closer to today it is, the worse it is.
Yeah, but I just, like, on the one hand, it's really wonderful to see them in not only in another country, but visibly in a different country.
Yeah.
Because you can say, oh,
it's just a shame
we're in the United States in a bunker hundreds of miles below Utah. Okay.
Thanks, Queen.
If you say so.
But then when they actually go to, but when they're at, you know, Lake Silencio, and then you're like, oh, you get to see the cliffs and the desert, and they're like out by this huge lake.
Excuse me. I guess they technically were in New Mexico.
Yeah, they've been, like, they've come to America a few times, and I, you know, appreciate when they do.
That was a dig on Dreamland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's
they were anywhere.
It's disappointing that they chose. It's not just
because I'm not even upset at the fact that they chose Spain. That's fine.
They chose, like, a house in the sticks.
They chose a villa that they usurped from an old dying woman.
Yeah. So there's no real visual interest because it's all.
Yeah. Other than that, she's
the same.
Other than that, she's religious. Therefore, she has a shrine of Guadalupe. But other than that. Because it's not even like, oh, wow. And, like, forgive me if my history and tradition is muddled. But if this episode was set, like, during the month of October, November, it's like, oh, that could be really cool. She could have, like, a whole ofrenda out.
And, yeah.
Wow. Even if that doesn't aid into the story, at least there is something of visual intrigue.
Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, we just have iron bars on the windows and lace, like, draperies.
Yeah, and maybe we're
stone tiles, and that's
And I'll say maybe we as Americans are spoiled by the fact that, you know, Universal just has places that look like Spain in its back lot.
I mean, it's also like, if you, because I forget, you're not from here. At least any native Californian, I feel like, will have had the same experience of at some point in your grade school upbringing, learning about the Spanish missions all up and down California coast.
Yeah.
So, you know, because especially where we are, there is a lot of Spanish heritage and influence, and it's not difficult to find a house that was built at some point during the early 1800s that still maintains its iron, like, iron decorations and stone tiles. And,
yeah,
you know, I went to school with one of those.
Yeah, so maybe in the UK that place is more visually interesting. For us, it looks like I could find six places that look like that within 5 miles of our house.
Yeah, like there's a part where it's like, I wonder how much of this is jaded by, us, where we live, where we are when we're watching this. Mm-hmm. I just got the strangest craving for horseradish. Just completely unrelated. Don't. I like really like strong, like spicy Chinese mustard.
They mentioned so many foods in this episode and not a single one of them was horseradish.
I know. That is the one thing. Well, because I was just thinking about like really good cuisine, and that's one of my favorite things to do is like during a meal when you have like those really high intensity flavors that you can just like overwhelm and flood your like palate with. Mm-hmm. Like when you're eating Chinese food and you have some of the hot mustard and then it's like, oh my God, I can see again. Sorry. That's another thing. They talked so much about food, and yet never once did we see a single food. We saw the remnants of food.
Yeah, they were like in the middle of a meal at that restaurant, but because they're actors they can't be seen eating on camera.
They had spoken of so many dishes and bottles of wine, and yet there was not a single sign.
They mentioned a family-sized paella.
Ugh.
I did not see nary a tray big enough for a family-sized paella.
They mentioned 18 bottles of wine. Where on earth were those bottles?
If your bussers are that on point, give them a raise. I mean, I know you can't because you were stabbed to death in the middle of your restaurant.
Well, that and also they get paid way better over there than here.
Interesting.
So they're already.
That sucks for us.
Oh, don't even get me started about minimum wage in the U.S. That is a whole other, that's a different podcast, but needless to say, there were some things about this episode that I can appreciate. Mm-hmm. I do think it was silly to have the Santarin even featured, unless they are the main catalyst, which also, I don't like vintage Santarins. They looked way more potato-y. Make them shorter.
Make them little guys. It is worth noting that Robert Holmes came up with the Santarins. I don't know if that's why they're there. If someone said that, hey, you wrote the Santarins, put them in your story.
They didn't need to be there.
No, they didn't. They added so little.
That's why.
In fact,
I'm
actually, they took away from the story. That should have been more of the Andragums, because then it would have felt like there was a more Andragum force.
Well, because if we had seen other Andragums, because right now the only ones that we saw were Chasini, who was augmented.
Yeah, so it doesn't really feel like one at all. And then,
Shock Eye. The only person that we have that we can use as a reference is Shock Eye. Give us like eight more have other characteristics and quirks so that way we can really see and go, oh, OK, I understand how these are not people, how these are humanoid, but they by no means are humans because they have some qualities. They're extra hairy. Maybe one of them is like Cousin It.
Yeah. And there's a lot of dropped opportunity. There's a few that they find that I do appreciate, but there was a handful of like dropped opportunities to really emphasize the fact that the Andragums will go places and just eat everything.
Yeah. He eats a rat. That's awesome.
He eats a rat. But then there's one point where he's like waving around the Santarin's leg and I'm like, he should be eating the leg.
Yeah.
Like that. Like you should be like, yes, the acid really brings out some of the tannins in this leg.
Yeah, like there were enough missed opportunities.
And even if we don't want to say like that was like a missed opportunity, there's just not enough. He should be always eating something, even if it's just the actor fake chewing and holding some alien fruit or something.
He dug up a grave and now he's eating a skeleton.
Yeah, like he should be eating. Like he found a bunch of cockroaches in the corner. And now he's munching on them like a snack. He is always eating something.
If you're emphasizing that the reason why we should be afraid of this being of this species is because of their ravenous appetite.
Mm-hmm.
Then I need to be afraid, because right now I'm like, that's just a guy.
Yeah.
That's just a guy who knows about food.
Yeah.
I'm dating a guy who knows about food. Are you an Andragum, Zach?
Why would you ask me that?
Well, because there was no distinguishing features about them to make me know that they were Andragums. So truly.
No, I mean, they had big, stupid eyebrows. Are you saying I have big, stupid eyebrows?
Yeah, actually, the only.
Fuck.
Hang on. Hang on.
The only difference is that theirs were...
Don't look at my face. Hang on.
The only difference is that theirs were like super orange and yours are only kind of orange.
Yeah, my beard is what's orange.
Yeah.
I keep all... That's how I hide it. I hide it in my beard.
Hmm. But...
And Shockeye is so like unthreatening.
Shockeye is just kind of a doof.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, he is this episode's excuse for comedic time or like comedic relief. And if that's the case, lean into it 5,000%.
Yeah. He needed to be way bigger.
Give him like big, weird, like, you know, Jim Carrey in the mask, how he had the teeth.
Mm-hmm. And I honestly feel like it would have been better if you'd had the,
like, give him chompers.
If you had more androgams too, you start having them like especially in this area where,
oh my God, they're fighting over food.
They're fighting over food. Somebody tries something and they don't really like it, but then someone else wants to eat it just because they do. So that guy who didn't really like it is now trying to continue eating the rat. Like, rat's a little gamey and I don't really like the meat of it. It's like, well, give it to me then. He's like, no, it's mine. Like, it was so
lackluster.
It's so poorly executed on so many levels. I almost have to assume the script had to like go through there's obvious things that aren't there. Some of which is obviously like the setting is not what they wanted. They wanted it to be a much more visually striking place in New Orleans. And also the food setting would have made way more sense. But it is just, you know, like a lot of things in it just feel like it was really poorly executed. And I don't know if that
even
was,
even if they had, because I'm thinking about it more now, they could have put them in like a vineyard or something.
Yeah.
Like a space where a farm where then you have this visual of like, OK, cool. This guy's going nuts because there is so much food for him to eat.
Mm hmm.
And we can see him eating all the food and not being satisfied. Oh, shit. We should be afraid.
Yeah. And then they never really make any, like I said, if they're trying to make a point about, you know, eating meat and being a vegetarian and trying to compare it to, you know, cannibalism or at least eating humans, he never once eats any regular meat. The only other regular meat he eats is a rat. And humans don't eat rats.
We see him eat pork.
Does he eat pork?
Yeah, at the dinner.
No, that's the thing. At the dinner, yeah, they're eating all kinds of things. There's no moment where it's like presented as,
oh, he's like going out of his way to like find That's what I'm saying. They could have put them on a farm.
Yeah, and he's eating a paella, which is mostly rice. That's not like they're not doing things to demonstrate that the meat is bad. It's just it just seems like this guy wants to eat human meat.
Do you know what I think it was? Because you said that the writer is vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what his problem was. His brain just wasn't working at full capacity because
he wasn't getting his protein.
He didn't get his protein. He's been living off of legumes. Everybody knows that vegans are the worst writers.
Yeah, that's why at the end of
I got you with that one.
You did.
Oh no.
My brother's gonna be so mad when he hears that.
I was gonna say they're gonna come after me. Oh geez, I'm shaking.
You'll be able to fight them off so easily though, because they haven't had their protein.
I know. I'll just throw a piece of cheese at them.
They melt like the witch in the Wizard of Oz.
Take that and throw a chicken leg.
Splash chicken broth on them. Ah!
Yeah.
I forgot.
God, being mean to vegans is fun.
That's why
the girl who literally can't have dairy or nightshades or melons.
But that's why at the end of the story, like inexplicably, Colin Baker says, I think it'll be a nice vegetarian diet for us from now on. I'm like, the problem wasn't the meat. The problem was that he wanted to eat everything.
That, and he called you a little bit fat. You're fine, dude. There has not been a single plus size doctor. Could you imagine, like, complete side tangent, but like back in the day, if we had had Chris Farley as a doctor, interesting.
I mean, especially in, well, so there was so between this season and the next season, the show went on a bit of a hiatus, I think, for a year, maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that time, Colin Baker did put on more weight. He is noticeably heavier in his second season than he is in his first.
Mm.
So I think he's a bit of a plus size doctor. I mean, he's plus size in the way that I am, where it's like,
I guess I'm also wondering how normal it is to be like a very large person.
Yeah, it might be different
than in the UK than it is here.
I mean, he's a much larger man now, so you know.
If
they bring him back now, he would look he would certainly fit that bill.
That's okay.
But you know, you know, Colin Baker is still a wonderful performer. I really just like listening to him read lines. Patrick Troughton, of course, very entertaining to watch. He could do one of the best moments in the entire episode is when they like take the little net off him after the transfusion. You just see his face after he's been turned half Andrew. And he just looks like
eyes are going all crazy.
He looks like someone who just like he looks like a little boy that got into trouble and wants you to know about it.
He looks. Oh, my God. Baby Herbert.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed in this episode, the story. I especially considering I love the Three Doctors. I think the Three Doctors is great. I think the Five Doctors not as good as the Three Doctors, but the Five Doctors is pretty good. And this just sucks. I don't like it.
The one saving grace is, could you imagine if this was an anniversary special?
Yeah, that would have been a little
like
rough.
At least this is just a fun little treat of you get a multi-doctor story. Here's a treat. We haven't done one in a minute. If this was celebrating an anniversary, riots. The show would have ended.
Well, so that's the thing is part of what may have hurt this episode is the show was being actively sabotaged at the time. The people in charge of the show didn't really want to keep the show. They either didn't want to keep the show going or they didn't want to be on the show anymore, and neither one could get what they wanted. So I think there's a part of it where they genuinely were, you know, where there might have been a little bit like a, hey, the story that you wrote cost too much money, so we're going to slash it until it's not fun anymore.
You did have a budget of a couple $100,000, but now you have a budget of
all these coins I fit in this mug.
Yeah, of 99.9.
Cents, pence, excuse me. But we are going to watch something a little higher budget next time, because next time next time is going to be our 100th episode, Cassie.
What? Okay.
I know, right? That is wild.
100.
Right. I don't think I've done 100 episodes of anything in my life.
I haven't done 100 of anything ever.
I think I did 100 push-ups like 1 year.
Nah, I mean, I just passed my 100th breath. 100.
Yeah, we're coming up on our 100th episode. And
what are we doing special for 100?
Well, for it, I've picked something specific for you. I think the exact midpoint of our two interests. Because it is Doctor Who related, but it's, and it's Dalek emphasized. Next episode, we're going to watch the Peter Cushing movie set in the mid-60s, like from the mid-60s, which is a retelling of the Bill Hartnell story, The Daleks, but with the aesthetics and budget of a 1960s movie.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I think you saw over my shoulder just me looking at the opening credits a few days ago. That's what we're watching. So I hope you're looking forward to that. I hope you're all looking forward to that. It's going to be a very silly 100th episode. It feels weird. I always thought that the 50th anniversary would land here, but it just didn't work out because I have a few other things I want us to do first. So instead we'll be watching the Peter Cushing.
We'll be watching something that only tangentially has to do with Doctor Who.
I mean, it's got something very much to do with, because the title of that movie is Doctor Who and the Daleks. So we will.
It's tangentially related.
It is tangentially related. But we will all watch that on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed. Day, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode more than we enjoyed the two doctors. Oh boy. But next week is our 100th episode, which is a pretty big deal for us. So I hope you are subscribed so you are notified when that episode drops next week. And if you'd like to get it right now, you can support us over on Patreon at patreon.com/whoismydoctor, where for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to episodes of this podcast a whole week early. Patrons also get access to exclusive minisodes where we look at some Doctor Who shorts and other stuff like that. And it helps us make this podcast, so it's a win for everybody. Special thanks go out to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, Julian Erlebacher, and Daniel Lindgren. We'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.